Good morning, Lagos. Good morning, Nigeria. Good morning, the wider world. How are you doing today? Welcome to yet another episode, or make that an edition, of COVID-19 Heroes. My name is Femi Obong Daniels. It's such a delight to be here. An interesting day for me. And you know I never do this alone. I do it with my friend, my brother, amazing all-round guy, Weber Boa. Good morning, Weber. How are you doing?
Good morning, Femi. How's it going over there?
Well, not bad at all. It's the rains have been something else this morning. I don't know whether you felt it, but...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Showers of blessings, they say. May it wash away all this COVID-19, if it could. All right, so let's get on the show. Quick one. By the way, I am the guy who gets to sit in the studio. Weber is the guy who gets to connect via Skype. And on this show, we bring... real heroes in these times of crisis. And we have an amazing hero this morning. You've probably seen the promo. Weber will introduce our hero of the morning, and you will find out just why. Issues to discuss, you probably already know, because we've been heavy with the promotions, and essentially it's protecting our vulnerable heroes. Protecting our vulnerable heroes. You have an idea who those vulnerable heroes are, but we'll bring you up to speed. Welcome to the show again. Weber, please take it from here.
Thanks, fam. Today we have a guest by the name of Abubakar Sulin, who's the CEO of Sulin. And Abubakar has actually been a phenomenal CEO of a bank in Nigeria, and the banking world a bit upside down. Long before the COVID crisis, he was a hero to me in the banking sector. So Abubakar, thank you so much for coming in this morning. I know today is Ramadan holiday and all that. So thank you for taking the time out to spend with us.
Thank you, Weber. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. So listen, I actually want to step back before we talk about Sterling Bank's COVID response. Sterling has been a hero for a while. I mean, you basically repositioned the bank as an impact investor, which in the Nigerian banking sector is quite unheard of. What was the impetus for Sterling to not play the role? So let's step.
Weber.
To do that as a CEO.
Okay, I think there's something wrong with your connection. You're going to have to come back with that question. You just broke up a bit, if you don't mind.
Okay. Is it okay now?
Yeah, it's better.
Yeah, I was just saying, so Abubakar, if you could let us know, because I feel like it gives up to why Sterling is doing what they're doing now. What made you decide to lead the bank to become more like an impact investor and that kind of thing when you became CEO?
Good morning, Weber. Morning, Femi.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for inviting me once again. The question of why we've taken the direction we've taken really is not about me. It is true that I have tried to push the agenda further. But the bank that I work for has always had a different perspective, at least in the last decade. And our perspective is that you cannot win when everything around you is failing. So the kind of progress or victory that requires everything around you to be surpassed is not the sort of thing we desire. You cannot be, in our view, a successful person in a failed society. You may be wealthy, you might have resources, you might even be a big corporation, you are listed on the exchange, but what is the nature of your success if your society is failing? And that fundamentally has defined our perspective as the executive of Sterling Bank and the board of Sterling Bank. And so this is really about, let's not fool ourselves. There are no successful people in a failed society. And one of the arguments we make is that when a society fails, everybody fails with it. Even those who manage to escape cross-border, they escape as refugees. And there are no honorable refugees. All refugees are treated as products of a failed society.
Mm-hmm. We're building up towards looking at our most vulnerable heroes, our heroes out on the field, who are risking their lives, who are doing the best they can to save lives and to save people and to do whatever they can. And so we're going to build gradually into that. For now, though, you just mentioned on, you know, why you went into impact investing. You are the CEO of Sterling Bank. I want to know, though, what are the impact focus areas of your bank? And has it been good for business?
Well, thanks for that. Again, we try to build an institution around three critical pillars. And one of the pillars is what we call the focus sector or the impact sectors. The others are pretty straightforward. Everybody does it. One is digitization, and the other one is to build an agile organization, which is sort of a people transformation project. But what is unique to us is what we call our focus sector. We call it the heart of Sterling, and heart stands for health, education, agriculture, renewable energy, and transport. We did our research and we concluded that if we could choose five sectors where we would have the most meaningful impact, where we can actually transform the sector, sectors where by bringing in finance and a little bit of the research that we have and some technology, we could have a larger than life impact, it was those five sectors. Not only are the five sectors sustainability sectors, they are also sectors that are responsible, primarily responsible for quality of life. They are also sectors that have a significant impact on employment. These are all labor-intensive sectors. And everything else really, truly is built on that. So we chose those sectors very carefully. We realized that they account for a significant part of our GDP. They're responsible for employment. And therefore, if you can succeed with those sectors, you will grow. Has it been good for business? I think the most important reward that we have received so far, it's that the people in the society who are responsible for the quality of life of Nigerians have started paying attention to us. I'm talking about not just the government. I'm talking about development institutions. I'm talking about foundations, NGOs, people who are focused on creating environment for a sustainable life are now our partners. But also we found that the people in the sectors now come to us, not just when they need financing, when they need advice, when they need people to bring in resources. And so for me, it's been a journey that I'm very proud to have been a part of, and we will do it again. Has it been profitable? The answer is absolutely yes.
Okay, so thank you for that, Abubakar. And can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I wanted to pivot towards the current situation. So in light of your slightly different approach to banking and so on, how has the supported its customers, particularly its small businesses in this time? My understanding, I think, is Sterling postponed debt payment, something like that. Maybe you can talk us through that, because I think that's part of also your response.
Okay, thank you, Raven. The first thing that we needed to do was to make it possible for our customers to continue to transact remotely. You know, it doesn't matter what you want to offer your customers. If you kept them off-grid for 30 days, when they come out of it, they would barely be able to meet any commitment. So we made sure that our customers could access their banking transaction throughout the period of the lockdown. The second thing we did was to build on what we had already done. We had taken the first layer of our retail customer, which is the consumer. And remember, in Nigeria, the distinction between the consumer and the SME is very big. A lot of people who are SMEs actually operate as using their individual account. So we were able to offer a platform for them to access credit remotely through Spectre. Spectre, it's the lending platform that we've created. What we've now done is to quickly accelerate transiting that logic and that technology to the SMEs. The third thing we've done is to then offer an opportunity for any of our SMEs that are struggling as a result of COVID to go online and apply to have their debts rescheduled. And for that, we're giving them discount on the fees, and we're giving them, taking out all the penalty clauses, and we're giving them this extension so that we can align their cash flow with the debt repayment. Our sense is that for us to survive COVID, we need to recognize this for what it is. These are not normal times. This requires everybody to take some pain so that we can collect come out of it.
So let's break it down as we come straight to the frontline workers and those vulnerable heroes who are putting their necks, their lives on the line for the benefit of others. One of the first corporate contributions that you had, your organization had to the response to this whole coronavirus thing was sort of your effort to raise funds for frontline workers. Please correct me if I am wrong. What I want to know is what was the big idea? Why? Where did the idea come from?
Okay, thank you very much. Let me correct an impression that came up earlier. I don't see us as heroes. I think heroes are everyday people who got found out. We're just people who got found out trying to do something that is important to the society, and we don't get carried away with that. For me, the trigger for me was me sitting down and reading a news item that says that 14% of those that had been infected in Spain were healthcare workers. It was such one of those lucid moments when you realize that's the most important thing that we should be worried about. You know, you can buy ventilators, you can build isolation centers. Maybe you won't be able to build a world-class hospital in 10 days like the Chinese, but maybe you can build it in 30 days or maybe in 60 days. But you can't create doctors in a year. You can't create nurses in 2 years. These are things that if you lose them, if they get infected, if they are isolated, if they're not available to cater to us, those ventilators are not going to operate themselves. So it just struck us that the most important people, the weakest link in the chain that we're trying to create, has been totally ignored. And then within days of that report, I then saw another report that said that the hazard allowance for medical personnel in Nigeria was 5,000 a month. And that it is only for those who are lucky to get paid the hazard allowance. That was the end of. At that point, I knew that if we're going to do anything at all during this COVID period, we must bring attention to the welfare of the healthcare workers. I mean, it was important to get them bring in personal protective equipment for them. That is critical. And we're pushing that, but it's also equally important that they're able to live a decent life, that they can go into those hospitals knowing that their basic needs are catered for. That was the moment. We could not afford 14% of those infected to be healthcare workers. If that happened to us, we're finished, especially at a time when the countries who could afford to pay them much better are losing healthcare workers and would do anything to attract the few that we have left.
Yes, I think for your point, I mean, Nigeria already struggles to have enough healthcare workers, and so to lose many of them.
Oh dear, we're losing you, Weaver.
I think it was a brilliant approach.
Okay,
can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Sorry, the connection isn't okay. So let me go straight to the question then. So tell us about how it was set up. I think you set up a platform where people could donate. Sterling also donated quite a significant amount of money up front. So what is the total donation now? How is the outpouring of support, Ben? Has it been quite phenomenal?
Thank you. Let's just say that we're quite proud with where we are now. It's not everything, but we're proud of it. We started by working with our foundation. We had a Sterling Foundation and a set up a fund, and the fund is for ₦1 billion. There is a crowdfunding platform called giving.ng. We as Sterling Bank gave a donation of 25 million. In the period since then, we've more than doubled the contribution from everyday Nigerians. We now have just under 60 million, and it is growing every day. So I do like how the platform is functioning right now.
All right.
Okay.
You want to do a follow-up, Weaver?
Well, it looks like we've lost him for a second.
Oh dear. He's back.
Okay, there you are. Okay. Okay, good. All right. Yeah, so the follow-up then is so how does it work? So people go to Give NigeriaGive.org?
It's called giving.ng. So behind, I would start with the governance of the platform. What we've done is that we have identified some of the most respected public healthcare professionals in Nigeria and invited them to create a governance platform. And they run the platform. Our job is, as financial partners, to continue the fundraising program to try and bring it to the attention of everybody so that we keep raising funds for them. They identify the medical facilities that are at the forefront of managing COVID infection. They identify the medical personnel, and then they run a process to verify their identity, get approval from those who manage those infrastructures to be sure that we have the right people, and then we pay them a hazard allowance so that they can, at the minimum, take care of their needs. What we do is to ensure that we keep raising funds so that the program can remain alive for as long as we need it.
You just mentioned that you have identified them. You have a strategy for identifying them. What the funds, what is it for, really? Is it for PPE or some other equipment? You did say you're looking at the organizations and you're looking for the individual health workers themselves. Is it both ways, or do they have to be necessarily associated with a buddy?
No. So we found out that we had put some investment behind testing, and a lot of people were putting money behind testing. We had put some investment behind building isolation centers. We made a donation of 50 million naira to a foundation to invest in isolation centers, and there were people doing that. We had also joined the co-cavit where we put money together for the government. What we found, what we realized was that a lot of that money will go to PPE, and PPEs were actually being sought and acquired. But the workers themselves were so poorly paid, were so poorly motivated, that if it wasn't for their oath of to do good, it would be difficult to see why they would even bother coming to the hospital. So this is about the people themselves. Now, will some of them decide to use part of that money for things that could otherwise have been provided by the healthcare authorities? Possibly. But at the minimum, we're empowering the people to make those decisions themselves. Every healthcare worker is entitled to go online and apply. The platform is open for application. What we do, what the governance committee does, and it is led by Dr. Lauku Soyinka, their job is to make sure that the people who have applied are the right people who should be receiving this stipend. And once that is done, they're then entitled to be paid.
So if I'm a health worker in Lagos, or, you know, around Nigeria listening to this, you said they go to the platform and they register. So what's the platform? The same platform, or it's a different one?
Same platform. Once you click on to giving.ng and you look out for the healthcare workers fund, you will see that once you get in there, you have two options. Either you donate to the fund or you apply to the fund.
Okay. Okay. And then what's the... And what's the feedback you've gotten? I mean, have you heard directly from some of these workers who now are receiving this a little bit more cash and feel a little bit more motivated, or are you not connected directly to them?
No, the feedback has been incredible. In fact, some of the most powerful feedback has come from family members, people who know them, who live with them, who have seen the change in their life as a result of this fund, who have gone public to say, wow, my parent, my mother has never had it this good, or my father is so happy now. This is it is. These are very touching testimonials on the value of what we are trying to do. And some of the medical personnel themselves have come directly to us to say, oh, all the years that I've worked in the healthcare sector, nobody has ever cared about me the way you have cared for us. And we have well over 100 people that have benefited from this now. So for us, if we ever doubted that this was the most important thing to do, I think their feedback has proven that. And the call we are making to everyone is that please remember this. It doesn't matter how many ventilators you have. If you don't have healthcare professionals, you don't have a hospital.
So let me lump a couple of questions into one, because they are all related. So we as a society, do you think we are doing enough for these, our people, our heroes on the front lines? if we are not, how can we do more? A matter of fact, suppose this crisis was to drag on and on for much longer. Do you even think Nigeria is equipped to respond, or how equipped do you think we are? And I also want to know what Sterling Bank will continue to do, whether indeed you will continue in this routine if coronavirus is with us another year, another 2 years.
Okay, thank you very much. The simple answer is that we are not doing enough, all of us. We are simply not doing enough for healthcare workers. The reality is that there are very few people listening today who cannot go online right now, get onto giving.ng and donate 500 naira. There is a USSD link there that allows you to just dial a short code and you donate 500 naira. It is not about giving 100 million, 200 million. We have spent over half a billion during this COVID. Over half a billion in supporting different from, you know, building isolation centers, building testing infrastructure, supporting healthcare workers, supporting our partners. We've done that, but it's not still not enough. So if you want to give 500 naira right now, do so. I would say we're doing enough when I see 100,000 different people donate, even if it is 100 naira each. Right, so we're not doing enough. The government, nobody is doing enough. We need to do more. The question is, if it is long drawn, are we equipped to handle this? My response is that COVID and the impact of COVID-19 will be long drawn. There's nothing you can do about that. Even if we manage to deal with the healthcare challenge that we're facing, we do have an economic challenge arising from that. This is going to be devastating for the poorest people in our society. We are going to still have a healthcare infrastructure problem, and we're still going to have a healthcare workers problem. So the idea that COVID goes today and the battle is won, unfortunately, I don't subscribe to that. I need this to be the beginning of us paying due attention to healthcare in this country. Without healthcare, we cannot build anything else. We cannot build education. Is Sterling Bank committed to this for the long run? The answer is absolutely yes. And the way to understand this is that we are operating through a foundation. So this is not just about the bank as a commercial entity doing CSR. We set up a foundation about a year and a half ago so that we can handle this sort of problem, so that we can continue to participate in the process of intervening where commercial intervention are not appropriate or sufficient. So we are committed for the long term. We will continue to give a part of our revenue towards doing social good, and we will continue to support especially the hard sectors, of which healthcare is number one.
I think now let's look forward. I think you've started looking forward a little bit, but how can we build back better both the health sector and the banking sector? You know, now that we're in this crisis and we have time to think about this, you know, how do we make it better so that in 6 months, 9 months, if we have another crisis like this, we're ready and more equipped, both from banking and from healthcare?
I'm going to start with healthcare. I think that the big mistake we're making in healthcare is to try to replicate the healthcare infrastructure that is in place in countries that have life expectancy of 80 years old, countries that are significantly urbanized, countries that have per capita income in excess of $40,000 per annum. That infrastructure does not make sense for us, and we cannot afford it. What we can afford, however, is to deploy technology very smartly. For instance, we supported a platform called Tremendoc. Tremendoc is one of the early players in telemedicine. And what they're able to do is, for as little as 2,000 naira a month, they're able to grant access to doctors across the world, to subscribers, so that you can get the first level consultation without the cost of driving or getting yourself to a hospital, without the cost of queuing up to wait for doctors, but you're getting high quality medical facilities. So we need to rethink our healthcare like that. We are now able to connect specialists to telemedicine so that the doctors can give you frontline, and if that is not enough, they can then move you to specialists. We need to focus on primary healthcare. Primary healthcare does not require $1 billion of investment. It requires $10,000 of investment in a particular community, and once you combine that with telemedicine, you raise the quality of healthcare significantly. We need to focus on pharmaceuticals. It is very important that once we're done with diagnostic, we must focus on pharmaceuticals. And of course, in between telemedicine and pharmaceuticals, we have to also focus on diagnostics. So the point is that we cannot make the kind of investment for people who have $5,000 medical insurance a year or $10,000. We don't have that. And there's no point working on that. But there are things we can work on because we have a youthful population, we have a rural population, we do have a per capita income that is not strong enough to carry that kind of cost. So let's rethink healthcare. Let's not just replicate healthcare. Now, down to banking, I see an opportunity. One of the things that I hope to accomplish in the time that I have in banking is to change the perspective of the society regarding banks. Banks are supposed to be significant enablers into building wealth. That is supposed to be our role. We need to be seen as that. We need to set out to unlock value. Part of unlocking value is obviously to lend money to those who need it. But sometimes, in our case, we need to be unorthodox about this. Sometimes it is about unlocking value within an ecosystem outside banking. So in our case, for instance, we're making investment in healthcare to unlock value in healthcare before we even lend to healthcare. We've done the same thing in the transport space where we've invested in putting payment system in mass transit. We're doing the same thing in agri where we've put in an exchange, a blockchain-based exchange that would allow farmers to be able to access the market for input and for them to be able to sell their commodities directly to the market. We must step away from our desk in our offices and step onto the street and understand what is affecting our customers and then use our advantage, the capital that we have, the human resources that we have, the access to technology that we have, and help solve problems in health, in education, in agriculture, transport, and renewable energy. Only when we do that can banking be seen as an enabler in wealth creation rather than just people who charge you a fee for looking after your money.
Abubakar Suleiman at Suleimana on social media. CEO Sterling Bank.